In the meeting of the House Health and Public Advocacy Committee, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3015. Diane.
Thank you, Chair Cruz and members of the committee. House Bill 3015 directs the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, also known as MHDDSD, to develop a plan for delivering mental health services to people incarcerated in state and local correctional facilities. It directs the division to report to an appropriate legislative committee during the 2003 legislative session. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. At your place, I have given you copies of the full reports that came out of the Joint Interim Task Force on Mental Health and Chemical Dependency Treatment. This was a fully legislative task force that was chaired by Representative Jeff Cruz and Senator Bill Fisher. The other report that you have came out of the Governor's Mental Health Alignment Work Group. That was an ongoing work group throughout the interim that the chair of our committee was also a member of. But it consisted of many people, not just legislators. And these are the findings and the recommendations that both of these task forces came up with. It encompasses a findings for the entire state. It doesn't just deal directly with the problem within law enforcement and correctional facilities. And behind the staff measure summary that I created for this bill is a short summary, actually, but I did give you some segments of these two reports that dealt primarily with law enforcement concerns and problems, and so you can kind of just see what those reports said specifically, but as a whole, I thought it would be a good idea to give you a more bigger picture of actually what the both task forces found true within the state and when they looked at it as a whole.
Okay, and we'll follow up on that committee. The genesis of this bill came basically during a couple of the meetings at the Governor's Mental Health Work Group where Mark Gibson and I were, because what came out of that work group was basically we tried to kind of get a big picture of what the system, the mental health system and delivery system looked like, and we came to the obvious conclusion that we probably aren't going to fix all of the things wrong with it in the next 6 months and or the next 2 years as far as that goes. So what we attempted to do at that point was look at what first steps we could do, and with all the testimony we heard during the interim about the fact that we have so many people with mental health problems that are ending up not only in the prison system but in city and county jails, and there's really not a mechanism for service delivery to those people that works well or has the funding to do it well. We thought that maybe the first place we look is how we deliver services to where that group of folks is. Obviously we've got all the money in the world, we could build a statewide forensic unit and take care of them in a more appropriate setting, but we don't have the money to do that. So anyway, and that was the genesis of this, and so we thought that probably one of the first things we could do as far as dealing with the system was dealing with this segment of it, and therefore the study to figure out the best way to do that, which is what this bill is. So
I could also mention, Chair and members, that you will hear from MHCDSC that they do have some partnerships right now, some programs working with Department of Corrections and their division, dealing with how services are being delivered to people in the state facilities and the quality standards that are being monitored through that. And that, so that the division has become very active in this particular issue of dealing with people who are incarcerated in state facilities. One of the concerns that you'll hear from the sheriff of Marion County and his other officials is with the closure of a couple of very large facilities in this county, moving people into the community-based setting, some of their concerns and problems and issues have gone up. And so to get their perspective on what they're dealing with is probably very like the perspective you're good, that would be true in other counties as well. But Marion County is the second largest county that we have in the state, and a good example of what law enforcement at the local level is facing.
Since I would have some folks that probably need to get back to work on the list, I'm going to call up first Sheriff Ramirez and Mike Wilkerson. So you can get back and protect me because I live here now.
Well, so, they may, and
you guys want to come up with them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Bring the whole team up.
Yeah.
And I actually think Mike McKenzie is with them.
Okay.
I don't think Terry is going to be.
Okay, we'll find out.
Yeah.
I'm glad you could come.
Well, thank you.
Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Cruz and committee members. My name is Raul Ramirez, Marion County Sheriff, Salem, Oregon. Thank you very much for having us here to testify before you. Along with me will be some of the staff that work at the Sheriff's Office that will share with you from their perspective and their specific area of responsibility the challenges that we face in addressing and dealing with folks that come to our attention with mental health issues. Also giving testimony today will be Commander Rick McKenna, who oversees the Community Corrections Parole and Probation Division of the Sheriff's Office, Under Sheriff Mike Wilkerson, who is responsible for the institution, which is the jail and work center for the Sheriff's Office, as well as overseeing community corrections, and then Commander Ted Nelson, who is our jail commander. I'd like to start out and just kind of reiterate the problem from a public safety standpoint that we continuously face in addressing this problem, not only at the local level in working with communities, but the fact that Marion County is the fifth largest county population. We're the fifth largest in population, but we have the second largest jail in the state of Oregon behind Multnomah County. And unfortunately, this being the state capital, the county seat, we also have a lot of state facilities located within the county. So when we look at disparate impact in Marion County with the issue of mental health problems, it's very severe, as well as the challenges that other communities are facing. From a law enforcement standpoint, as a sheriff's office, we're pretty unique in the type of services that we deliver. And let me just quickly just give you an overview of that. Our agency is composed of an enforcement component, which is deputies responding out to the community to enforce criminal and traffic laws. We also manage the local jail facility, county jail facility. The third unique component of our agency is the fact that parole and probation is also under my office, which gives us the ability to assist and manage offenders through the whole system within the sheriff's office, which is unique. Not all sheriff's offices in the state of Oregon, and for that matter, in the country, have parole and probation under the agency, under the sheriff. The challenge that we continue to face, and certainly with the downsizing of the Oregon State Hospital, Fairview, and other facilities within Marion County, we certainly have felt that impact here at the local level. And the concerns that I bring forward to you, as you've heard in the reports that have been presented to you, is the ongoing demand of services at the local level, police officers having to deal with individuals with mental health issues that become involved in the criminal justice system because of a lack of services that are not available at the local level to deal with the challenges that they face having those problems. But then again, it becomes a problematic for law enforcement in that we ultimately have to respond to complaints and concerns by the community that ultimately end up creating a criminal case on an individual with a mental health problem. What happens then is that individual is taken into custody, is then lodged in our jail, depending on the crime that that individual commits. And our jail is not designed, it is not a mental health facility. That's the unfortunate thing, that it has become a mental health facility. If you look at our jail, and we have some reports, a report that we will share with you, identifying the problem on a national, state, as well as the local level, specifically to Marion County, that Commander Rick McKenna will share with you. But we've gone from a facility with 528 prisoners that has ballooned up to 20% of our inmates in our facility have some issue with mental illness in one capacity or another. This is an inappropriate use of limited, valuable jail beds, that individuals with mental health issues should not be incarcerated. These services for these individuals should be provided in the community at alternative locations with our alternative programs and resources. We can't continue doing that as we continue to face those limited resources within the county. It will continue to push individuals with mental health issues into facilities such as our jail. That's an inappropriate use. With that, I will turn over this portion of the presentation over to Commander Rick McKenna, who will share with you the report that was prepared for Marion County on the mental health problem.
Thank you, Sheriff, and members of the committee. I notice in Director Kast's letter, he talks about the Mental Health Division currently conducting a survey of all county and regional jails to determine what's available, what's lacking, and the approximate number on a monthly basis of people with mental illness confined in the jails. And that's been an ongoing problem locally, is getting some numbers. So the sheriff commissioned a study that we ran between April 15th and May 15th last year of the inmates in custody in the Marion County Jail. We looked at a total of 142 referrals that were made during that time frame. That 142 people basically translated to an average daily population of about 97 to 100, or 17 to 20% every single day in the Marion County Corrections Facility. And we looked at, as the sheriff indicated, national standards. So what you have in front of you here with this report is a summary of information that we gathered during that survey. We looked at things nationally, the percentage of people reported incarcerated in the nation's prisons and jails who were mentally ill, over a quarter of a million, as it indicates here. Obvious likelihood of them being more homeless and chronically unemployed. And then we went on also to look at some national standards, Americans with Disabilities Act, National Institute of Corrections. You can see for yourself the six standards that they basically suggested would be appropriate for adequate mental health services in any kind of corrections facility. On page two, looking at the impact on Marion County, 1992, the Oregon State Hospital closed two of the wards consisting of 60 beds. That was primarily serving Marion County. And the trend line in the Marion County Jail has been steadily upward ever since. We did gather some statistical data, as you can see, from Salem Hospital, 272 admissions, and I'd underscore admissions because there were more people they screened than that during that calendar year. And then 225 people contacted and arrested by Salem police per year during the period between 1995 and 1999. On page three, we'll shift down to demographics here, and now we're looking specifically at Marion County. There's a full slide I'll come back to that's at the back of the packet.
Representative Monson,
could I just go back to the one when you said you had 272 admissions to the hospital last year were for mental health emergencies, mm-hmm. and then 225. Were any of those repeats, do you think?
I think
also?
A tremendous number are. And when we actually begin to look at some of the data, you see that cycling that's occurring. It shows up in the length of time that people are spending versus the control group that we looked at. It's very evident in the course of the survey. from the demographics on page three, the comparison group that we had, the average age, it's a little older than you might expect, 32 for our comparison group, and the group of mental health offenders, average age 34. Interestingly enough, and this shows up in a lot of surveys, almost four times as many women in the study group. Disproportionately represented within this group of people and within the jail population. Again, this is the comparison group. Study group made up 17% of the jail population during the period of the study, actually spiked as high as 25% on certain days. On page four, incarceration, and this speaks to the issue that you were raising. The study group was incarcerated an average of almost 4 months per person, a month longer than the comparison group. And that basically means that they spent during the preceding year 4 of 12 months in the Marion County Jail. And that's only speaking to the Marion County Jail because that's the only facility we were able to analyze. They could have been in other jails and other places as well. They were incarcerated 23% more often than the comparison group and committed 17% more offenses. That often speaks to the fact that you get charge loading, from officers who are picking them up, trying to demonstrate to jail personnel that these people really need to be held. So you'll get two, three, four charges lodged at the same time the person is brought in. And what did they look like? 73% of the offenders were diagnosed with a severe and persistent mental illness. And we're talking basically schizophrenia and bipolar illness. Those are the primary two diagnoses here. 37% severe and persistent mental illness only, 36% co-occurring mental disability as well as substance abuse. So that's that issue of self-medicating that's often there. So roughly half of the people that we diagnosed with a severe and persistent mental illness also had a co-occurring disorder. And the mental health issues concerned continued. Medications, this is an interesting piece. On the average, people were receiving an average of two medications each. 77% of the individuals in the study group were on some form of psychotropic medication while in jail. And Ted Nelson will talk about what the cost means to the Marion County Jail for people that are at those levels. Yes.
When you say they were on medication, were they on medication before they were arrested too, or had they maybe gone off their medication and they got into the system and they were put on?
Well, that's an interesting question because when we did the survey, we looked at prior mental health treatment, and admittedly, this is self-report, but only 22 of the 142, that's 15% of the group, self-reported that they had a prior contact with a health department or a state hospital facility. So they're basically saying, whatever they were doing at the time they came into the jail, they were not currently connected with the health department or with the system.
Or taking medication.
Yeah. Often, those are correlated issues for the group.
I was backing up just a little bit more since how we stopped you. I guess I'm a little surprised that I guess I might have thought the dual diagnosis percent might be higher, but what percent of your population, and that's mm-hmm. a hard number to get to, I know that.
Yes, it is.
What percent of your population is just substance abuse without dual?
If you're looking at the parole and probation population, we estimate 70 to 80%.
So you're fairly much normal with everybody else, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Gender differences, I spoke to that earlier. Women in the experimental group did spend less time incarcerated than the men, but they were significantly more likely to be taking medications and, again, were much more highly represented in the overall population. Some other things that we looked at, were violence comparisons here with the other group that basically is not showing as mental health cases. Again, and this has shown up in a number of studies, there are not significant differences in terms of the violence potential of the two groups, but they're comparatively speaking about the same.
Is there a difference between schizophrenics and bipolars on that, or did you get to that level of distinction?
Well, I don't feel like I've got the level of expertise to do that. Perhaps Director Cast or someone else could address that issue.
Well, I doubt if our information gathering has got to that level of minutia.
At that level of expertise, no, you're right. Actually, the survey that we conducted, we put together a series of questions that we thought were relevant. And, he's absolutely right in stating that we need, ongoing data collection, and that we're all collecting the same data over a period of time so you can begin to answer that kind of question. The other issue that came up on page 5, the box on supervision, that's 64 out of 142, so a little less than half of the group was actually on some form of supervision to us. More than half were walking out of jail with no supervision when they left. And even within that group that we supervise, that parole and probation is responsible with, within the first month after they were released, about two-thirds were reported as non-compliant, and a quarter of that group had been returned to jail on a new violation.
Okay, well, I'm assuming that when you're talking about under your supervision, that's your normal parole process, which obviously is not nearly intensive enough for these people that need some kind of fairly intensive counseling to make sure that they're doing their meds and sticking on a program and trying to level out. So
absolutely, and along with that goes a lack of coordinated training on mental health issues as well. So that the parole officer that's handling the case has some expertise. It's that interface between health department and parole and probation supervision to get a good result. On page 6, looking at medication, again, two-thirds stopped taking their medication that they started while they were in jail, while they were incarcerated. A quarter were homeless or living in temporary housing, and three-quarters were not involved in mental health treatment. Jails do tend to get the people who cycle over and over again. They've been kicked out of a lot of programs. If they once were in programs, they're not now. It's one of the reasons they're spending so much of their time in jail. And then we looked nationally at how did our data compare. And again, nationally, 16% of the men in jail or probation report a mental condition, or 17% roughly. Women more likely to report mental illness. Mental illness more readily seen in the middle-aged jail population. In our average age is up somewhat. Then on page 7, if I could skip down to insufficiently trained corrections officers, and let me add parole and probation officers to that as well. Lack of appropriate housing facilities in Marion County is one of the jails in which we do not have the luxury of having a unit that we can designate as a mental health facility. Ted will talk a little more about that. On page 8, we looked at several issues here. Refusal of services, and again, that speaks to the nature of the client population who have not been very successful completing programs. So we're dealing constantly with the issue of follow-up, who's going to be the person that's responsible for ensuring that medications are monitored and getting residents and working with the client once they're released. And then, of course, Oregon Health Plan issues and getting people signed up and getting that plan back into effect because it lapses when they're in jail.
We've got a plan to take care of that.
Good.
Okay.
Other issues that we identified, screening and release planning not being available, lack of continuity of services. And our survey basically was intended to influence our Board of Commissioners and our health department that we really needed to take a different look at how we were handling the mental health population. So we asked for three basic things. One, that we fully fund a mental health case manager position at the Marion County Corrections Facility. That has occurred. Secondly, that we increase the availability of supported housing for corrections mental health clients. And we gave ourselves a year to work on that planning process. That's a crucial piece. And then phase three, supplement psychiatric services at the corrections facility with the addition of a full-time nurse practitioner or psychiatrist experienced in working with offenders with co-occurring disorders. And that jumps us to the last page of the document where we were comparing ourselves to the other big five counties in the state of Oregon. And despite the size of our jail, we have very little psychiatric evaluation services, only 0.3 FTE at the time. That's definitely an issue when it comes to making sure that we've properly and accurately diagnosed people coming through the door. And service level has increased dramatically in Marion County with the addition of a mental health worker, and we've also contracted with parole and probation where beginning July 1st we'll have a mental health qualified mental health professional working with parole and probation as well. That's still way low in terms of the overall need. And the last thing, if I could, I tried to summarize that material on a single page, so we have that available to you. And the last thing I wanted to comment on were what we identified as the service gaps. And the first one is that increased funding for mental health counselors, the diagnostic services, the supportive housing. But for development of alternatives at the arrest and pretrial level, which came up in the work group as well, mental health courts, something that basically it would serve to divert people, give us some options, at the time of intake, and then enhanced mental health services for both parole and probation and health department staff in terms of supervising offenders in the community. And with that, I'll leave Commander Nelson to talk about jail experiences.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ted Nelson. I'm the jail commander for the Marion County Jail. I've been jail commander for approximately 14 years. I began my career as jail commander in an old jail atop our county courthouse with 80 beds. We moved to a new facility 12 years ago with 255 beds. Today we're at 528 beds. My purpose in addressing you today is to support this particular bill, because from an operational perspective, for the staff that work in that jail 24 hours a day, we consider this to be a critical situation. As Rick pointed out earlier, nearly one in five of every inmate that walks through our doors in our booking facility has a mental health problem. We book 16,000 people a year through our particular jail alone. So as you can tell, we are very much like a MASH unit, where we're heavily involved in triage at the front end, and we move people very quickly. Our staff at our facility, although they work very hard, we're not trained to deal with people with mental illness. That causes us considerable concern, considerable amount of work and effort as far as trying to deal with these folks. We only have approximately 4 hours a week of psychiatrist time to address our 100 to 125 inmates on any given day and their mental health issues. I spend over $9,000 a month just in psychotropic medications alone in our facility. So as you can see, with our issues of staff training or our lack of training, both at the corrections deputy level in the jail, I speak for our enforcement division in the field, as well as our parole and probation officers who deal with parolees and probationers, we're ill-equipped to handle nearly a 20% of our whole caseload. I did a quick telephone survey of other county jails throughout the state, because I believe you not only need to know about Marion County's situation, but you should hear about other jails throughout Oregon. They're in the same situation that we are at. It doesn't matter if you're in a 20-bed facility in Harney County and Burns, or if you're in a multi-thousand-bed facility in the Multnomah County system. It's the same everywhere. We've noticed that there has been a significant increase in the numbers of people that have come through our doors over the last 5 to 7 years. Coincides and follows only by a few years the downsizing of the state mental institutions. It's switched. If you look at some of the national statistics, one of the largest mental health institutions in the entire United States right now is the LA County Jail System. And we are following those national trends throughout Oregon, specifically in Marion County. those are the issues that we face on a day-in, day-out basis in trying to manage and operate our particular jail here in our county.
It's in the Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have heard that at least the county jails that either 80 or 90% of those who are arrested are have drug problems. So they're mentally ill and they're using or they're...
That's correct. They come in very sick. They're in a crisis situation. Our experience in dealing with the mentally ill is that they're in a new environment. They don't know how to handle that, so they begin to act out, exacerbate the situation.
Right.
Our lack of training, lack of understanding, I'm sure, contributes to that. So it becomes very critical, particularly in our booking unit, in its routine anymore.
Chair Mike Wilkerson, Undersheriff, Marion County Sheriff's Office, members of the committee, make my comments very short. I think everything has been echoed substantially here. I want to make just a couple of final comments. There's no doubt we support the bill, as you well aware of. That's why we're here. What we would ask for you to consider maybe is broadening the scope of the bill. You've heard the sheriff testify that at the front end, we would certainly encourage you to look at the planning efforts for non-custodial alternatives. We think by the time they get to the jail, they're pretty much in a crisis mode. We suggest that maybe the planning efforts look at encouraging participation from law enforcement as well on some particular study or some commission, which would look at other alternatives for the law enforcement when, in fact, they may be picked up, or even before that stages, what we can do to identify those particular people acting out before they commit crimes. The other piece that we would ask you to consider as far as expanding the scope is after they are finished with their particular programs, whether they be in custody or out of custody, that they're planning effort as a follow-up. These people need some particular attention, and it doesn't require either the criminal justice system to be involved, which is a very expensive process. As many of you already know, a jail is one of the most expensive sanctions available for these particular people. We would at least ask you to consider expanding it for the follow-up piece as well. I think some of those recommendations, Mr. Chair, as you already alluded to, I think came out of the Governor's Mental Health Alignment Work Group to help focus on some of those other alternative programs and stuff. We certainly encourage you to look at, as well as the Criminal Justice Commission Public Safety Plan, which was just published. They also are mm-hmm. recommending that those alternatives be looked at. So we encourage you to do that.
And I would point out that we do have another bill. It's more comprehensive, a planning bill that looks at the whole system and
right.
would pick up not only this but the other parts of it. I guess my focus here was, I mean, this is pure government here. Okay, and our ability to shift resources or to build resources into dealing with a specific part of it. I mean, this was maybe something we could do quicker than the collaborative piece, you know, where we're getting into contract providers and different things like that. That kind of water gets a little murkier there. So we will be hearing that other bill probably within the next 2 weeks. And so this is like a subset of a bigger set, but maybe an area I thought we should focus on first. So any questions? You got questions? Okay.
Yes.
Yes, you may.
I was wondering, when you talk about the number of people coming in and the problems with training officers and that, what's the turnover like in staff that deal with people coming in? Because that could be another complication if you finally get some officers dialed into the problem and they start to learn how to handle folks and then they leave. And then you have a new officer coming in.
Our particular turnover experience in the Marion County facility, and that's the only place I think I can, you know, speak to, is typical of other county jail facilities. It's about 5 to 7%, fairly low. So we think that the investment that we put into training will pay us back dividends for a significant period of time.
Though there's another critical piece in the jail facility that's a key factor in how we serve those individuals with mental illness, and that's our medical staff, which is basically staffed by nurses, and then we contracted physicians. We do have a turnover in nurses, and that's very problematic for us in retaining and recruiting nurses. There's a shortage. So that's another factor that compounds the problem.
That's probably the most important factor, because the turnover rate for nursing staff is much, much higher. It's probably, I would guess that the average nurse in our facility is with us 3 to 4 years maximum, and they move on to another job. That's been the experience of other county jails throughout, not only Oregon, but throughout the country. Very difficult to recruit and then hold on to that highly specialized kind of a nurse position that you need in a county jail facility.
I think a companion piece to making this system work more efficiently is also making the county mental health system work more efficiently. There's a huge hole there. We know that. We know that. We don't know where the money for it is, but we know that the problem's there. So, trust us, we will not just look at one. We're going to look at the whole thing and try to figure out a plan to get from point A to point B. But, part of this is, way back when they decided to shut down state facilities and made the decision, and maybe correctly, that the people would be better served in facilities within the communities they came from, and that may have been a good policy decision, but somehow the connection to fund the replacement structure never happened. So we shut that. We did the one thing, we didn't do the other, and which has basically created our problem here. So, mm-hmm. Did you have something up, Simon?
I do. I have a kind of a follow-up question to Diane's with regards to nurses. Commander, I think you mentioned that the nurses leave after 3 or 4 years. Do they go to other mental health facilities, or do they get out of mental health and go into another aspect of nursing? Or do they say, how with it all together?
Number one, they're not mental health nurses, and we cannot hire them for that. Our budget is specifically for a registered nurse to take care of medical needs. If we can find someone with mental health background or mental health training, that's all that much better for us. So the nurses that I speak to are registered nurses. We lose them for two reasons. We lose them to pay because their particular profession. Everyone is looking for nurses. You can pick up any paper, any place. So we can't compete with private enterprise. They beat us on pay. The second issue is a burnout issue. Nurses are trained to be in a helping mode. They're trained to trust what the patient says. In a correctional setting, that training is undone.
I know.
Because you have to take on a different view. You have to understand that there are many inmates in there that are going to tell you anything that they can to get more drugs and to support their habit. And I think those two combinations create the turnover rate that we have for nurses. And I'm trying to speak globally here, not just in Marion County's experience.
It wasn't their fault, and they were framed.
I've heard that.
Jails don't seem to attract necessarily the nicest group of people at all. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For coming. We really appreciate it.
Where am I?
Okay. Terry Bosch? Did you want to testify? No, you were on the list, and if you...
I didn't know we're not on the list.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, thank you for coming. Okay. Scott and Art, come on up.
And because they're dealing with different programs, Barry is going to also communicate with their partnership.
Barry, do you want to come up with them, or...? Okay, then I can, that's everybody on my list. I can get this by and be done with it.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking part of your evening to spend with us. We appreciate it.
Whatever the chair prefers.
The floor is yours, however you want to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Barry Cass, the administrator of the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. And we're here to support this bill. I think it's a good idea. And without going into much detail, it would require that we work with both state corrections and local authorities to bring forward a plan about how we respond to what you've heard is a serious transformation of our local jails and state correctional facilities into, in effect, replacements for what for a role that many people believe the state hospital used to perform. It is true that mental health is sort of everywhere and nowhere. I mean, every setting imaginable has to deal with the potential that people with mental illness are using that setting. We're trying, and we have been for 35 years, to make our mental health system community-based so we can respond to the needs of school systems where there are more and more children who are being identified as having mental disorders. Other kinds of settings, and local jails are certainly among them. As you've heard testified, corrections personnel are trained in security primarily, and although there's been some increase in training in the mental health area, they're still not trained as mental health workers primarily, not equipped to deal with many of the problems that the people face. I was a little surprised to hear the degree of violence in the population in Marion County. The last time we surveyed local jails about 10 years ago, our estimate was about 7.5% of the people in the local jails had a significant mental health problem. So you've seen a dramatic increase, more than a doubling in the estimates of the numbers. But the other finding we had then was that for the most part, people who were identified with mental health problems had committed less severe crimes but stayed longer than they otherwise would have and were more challenging and presented more behavioral difficulties for jail staff and therefore were much more costly than the average inmate on a monthly basis. So apparently we're seeing not only an increase in numbers but also in severity. That's why we're in the process of replicating that study and working with local jail managers to find out just how extensive that problem is. We've also seen, as you know from your work, Mr. Chairman, and the Governor's Alignment Work Group, that we're also seeing consistent growth in our state forensic population. And I don't want to be defensive about this, but I think it's more than changes in the state hospital. As you know, we have not decided to close our state hospitals, and in fact the governor's recommended budget will add more wards for really the first time in a governor's budget in many, many, many years. What we tried to do in the early 90s and late 80s was to transform the investment in the state hospitals, which today is about $4 million to operate a 30-35 bed ward, into an array of community services that could serve more people. And to a great extent, that has been achieved. More people are getting served in the community. But the demand for service has risen much more quickly than our ability to respond, and the counties are literally swamped with work. I think that there is a potential for some collaborative role between county mental health systems and county jail systems, but there is also an investment issue, and we'll have to deal with that. Finally, let me say that this is not just a Marion County issue, and it's not just an Oregon issue. This is an issue of major national attention now. The Department of Justice federally, the National Institute of Corrections, and other federal entities are now funding a massive effort to define this problem and to begin developing strategies to deal with it. And as you've heard testified, those strategies include not only dealing with the population in custody, but also the law enforcement response in the community and its relationship with the mental health system, the implementation of diversionary strategies, particularly mental health courts, which have received some attention. There are several operating in the country, and there's some research going on about how they might contribute, improvements in correctional settings themselves, and lest we appear to place the blame outside of our own system, improvements in the mental health system which need to be made to be more responsive to the community and less isolated in our own treatment environments. And I'm pleased to be a part of that effort. We're meeting with In those four areas that I mentioned, there will be a report next October. I think that the work that is being done nationally, federally, may contribute to the plan that you have in mind in this bill. With respect to the special attention given to the ability of local correctional facilities to administer medication, this always brings into play the issue of voluntary versus involuntary administration of medication. That is an area of considerable risk, and it is circumscribed by a lot of federal case law. And we've done a lot of work with Department of Corrections around how that might play out. So I think we would want to review that issue as a part of this plan as well.
When I was looking at that, you know, if we're having the proper type of assessment and the proper type of professionals that are hooked into the jail system, then that becomes part of that treatment plan. And obviously, you know, you can't just have anybody prescribing meds, but I was looking at the additional resources in the system to make sure that sort of thing can happen.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Thank you. And we look forward to working not only with state corrections. We have a very good relationship with the Department of Corrections, and which was a result really of a legislative review in 1995, which transformed the Department of Corrections mental health system into a department-based program, and our role is to help assure that that's a quality program as consultants and providing periodic review. And we've learned a lot from that, and we have the capacity, I think, to improve performance of the division or involve the division in local correctional systems or law enforcement systems as well. And I think what we've learned there may be of real value to the planning process.
Chairman Cruz, members of the House Health and Public Advocacy Committee, I'm Scott Taylor, Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Corrections, and joining me today is Arthur Tolan, who is a Program Manager of our Special Management Unit, Oregon State Penitentiary. The recent report by the Governor's Mental Health Alignment Group clearly documents the issues and problems this bill is intended to help address, and the department participated in that work group. Dr. Field participated. Unfortunately, he's not with us this week, and so he will join us in the future on this topic. And to be brief, prisons and jails are experiencing an increasing number of mentally ill persons entering state and local correction facilities, as you heard just a few minutes ago, and our numbers are very similar. We have about 18% of the inmates we have severe and persistent mental health problems that we deal with. We feel we have worked closely with the mental health department to create a system. And because of the uniqueness of our system, the size and the length of time we have people, we think we have a fairly good program set up, some high-quality staff, and we think we do a relatively good job of putting together a plan and following a plan that meets the needs of some of these individuals. But they are an ever-growing and they cause us considerable issue within a confinement institution. We've been working for the last year and a half on a transition program that we've talked about before, and part of that dynamic is to look at these folks transitioning back to the community. As you know, 95% of the folks that we have in the institutions will return to the community. And what this bill addresses for us or helps address is that as those folks return to the community, there is planning that has gone on there and is coordination. We have a few counties where that specialization coordination is being piloted at this point. Multnomah County would probably be our first pick for best wraparound service and coordination. And you'll notice from the chart that Marion County gave you, they're one of the few that actually has a transition mental health worker that comes in and works with the people and coordinates housing and where they're going. And we've only had a few cases so far go out to test that program, but it appears to be working very well and reducing the issues upon return to the from a correctional institution to the community. So we'd like to support this bill in that it seems to move forward with the idea of coordinating that plan and developing that plan. And we would certainly be participants in that. And I think we're here for
don't know if you had anything to say, for instance.
I will say that I would have a greater comfort level if we had the same level of resource allocation in the county and city jail systems that we've got in the state correctional institution. I mean, we've done some pretty good things in that direction. It's although nothing's perfect and it can be improved. I mean, you guys are certainly way ahead of other parts of the system that I think just don't have resources available at all. So, I mean, I commend you for the steps you've made in the last few years. I think it's commendable. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, did I understand you correct? Did you say 95% recidivism rate?
No, ma'am.
Chair Cruz, Representative Tomei. No, please. What I said was 95% would return to the community.
Oh, return to the community.
Our recidivism rate.
Recidivism, but it's a different rate.
And I'm so delighted that you're here, Scott, because with Representative Morissette being gone, we're used to having three ex-mayors here, so it's nice to have you still about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Fennell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, and Mr. Cass, maybe you can answer this, or actually any of you, please feel free to, but why we close mental health facilities when we have people who obviously need that type of care? I mean, and I understand the idea of just flat out institutionalizing people and, you know, sort of locking them away, and that's not the way to treat our mentally ill. But we obviously have a population that still needs that type of care as opposed to being able to function in the community. And without getting into the criminal justice system, and I'm just curious as to, you know, why it is that we have downsized those facilities to the point now where it's almost like, you know, we've in an effort to create a least restrictive environment, we've almost created another problem. Let you answer,
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. There are many people who would agree with the perception that you have. To understand what has happened here, those decisions need to be placed in context. And maybe if I could take just a minute or two, I'll do that. If you go back to the year that the division was created in 1961, our charge, at that time, we had no community programs. There were a couple of child guidance clinics, and a couple of counties had something, but there wasn't an organized program. And our charge from the legislature was to basically to help the counties develop community mental health services. That was a trend through the whole country. But what is often not discussed is the fact that the state hospital at that time was costing under $2 a day. Most of the labor was patient labor. There had been no civil rights movement, no federal court decisions about treatment, no federal standards, no Medicaid program, nothing. Over the next 15 years, the system was utterly transformed, and the cost started ramping up very dramatically. By the 1980s, we were looking for ways to serve more people within a budget that was not growing. We had, beginning about 1980, we had a recession here that was devastating. There was some recovery and then another recession in the early 90s, and at that time, a change in our tax structure, so there was no place to go for resources. In that environment, the state hospital, which because of federal policy only spends general funds for adults, we can't use Medicaid in the state hospital, was growing in cost and was unmatchable. And we looked at that situation, and because Medicaid would pay for community care, we reasoned that the function of this, and there had been an intervening commission that Governor Goldschmidt organized to bring forward a plan. And that plan was to change the role of the state hospital, to expand the role of community hospitals in serving people in acute phases of their illness, and develop the needed community services and housing and so forth for people who formerly would have relied on the state hospital. And we did that. We converted about 300 state hospital beds into about 1,200 community beds, including about 200 acute care beds. And we're getting more people into the hospital than ever before. Roughly doubled the number of admissions to the state hospital in 10 years. But does that system replace the role of the state hospital when 25 or 30 years ago, you'd send somebody to the state hospital, they'd be there for 6 months to a year. It has not. The biggest problems that we face are housing. Affordability of housing has deteriorated dramatically. It's a huge issue for transition planning. When I first moved to Corvallis 25 years ago, I rented a one-bedroom apartment for $35. And at that time, the SSI payment was about 2.25. That apartment probably costs $450 now, and our SSI payment is $424. So there's been the affordability of housing, the kinds of supports people need have become much more expensive. People who are marginal to begin with have found it a very unwelcome situation in the community. It's also true that we're incarcerating more people. What our correction system does compared to 10 or 15 years ago has been transformed. And in particular, the role of the county jail has been transformed, 1145 and so forth. And if you put all those issues together, custodial capacity in the state hospital, lack of affordability of housing, increase in the population, the access to illicit drugs of considerable debilitating effect, particularly on people with depression or a bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, that is not a good set of circumstances for the issue that we're dealing with. And many of those people find their way into jail either because of the severity of their crimes or because law enforcement has benevolently taken them into custody because they are lost in the community and can't fend for themselves. That is a responsibility we should be responding to. And I think we can bring forward a plan that will improve that situation. I don't think it'll be inexpensive. I think we've got a problem that's going to take some resources. And the other alternative is if we don't do something, it'll still take resources. Did we anticipate that in 1990 when we started down this road? I don't think we did. I think we were much more optimistic perhaps than we should have been about the capacity of the counties to respond to the range of issues that they would be confronted with in the absence of a state hospital which took all comers. And that is a change that has occurred in the role of the state hospital across the whole country, and that's why we're seeing what amounts to a national scandal with respect to the incarceration of mentally ill people. So I guess to use a correctional term, I plead guilty. I mean, I think we did the best we could, and I think we've got an area here where the system is not responding in the way it should, and we need to do something about it. That's why I support the bill.
Yeah. Please understand, I'm not trying to place any blame anywhere. I'm just trying to kind of figure out, because it seems like there is this population that needs the type of care that's offered in an institutional setting, state hospital. Type of setting, and yet at the same time, there's a tremendous need in the community as well, and that's why, you know, in the 99 session, we worked hard together to get 3446 through,
right.
And we have to continue hard to, we're working hard to sort of defend 3446, because there's been a couple of assaults, particularly on the damaged property.
Yeah.
Bills, they'd like to take some yards. Council would like to take a chunk of the money, and of course, my response to that is no. We're going to keep that money for mental health. If we ever get damaged property on its way to being sold. With regards to the mentally ill, the housing. The incarceration aspects, and you mentioned the resources, and I know with Senate Bill 1149 that changed the community corrections sort of aspect. Not 1149, 1145. That was the 95 session, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember the discussions that we had with relevant to that. But I'm just curious. As we start to try to seek out what the resource needs are going to be, and sort of, you know, we really have sort of a dragon with two heads, but yet they're sort of together yet because of the because of the relationship between the aspects of crime and the aspects of mental health.
Chair Cruz, Representative Kremer, I don't know if that was to me or Cass, but
any one of you, please feel free.
I think one of the things I would like to say is that through 1145, it's been a few years, we've been working at it, but one of the things that I'm beginning to notice is more of this kind of work where there's a collaboration going on between state and county, and that wraparound service where people are actually talking about who are these folks and how many of us serve them and how might we coordinate those services better, and that kind of dialogue is going on, and that probably... While I would never wish it on anybody, some of the shortages in budget and things kind of forced those conversations across walls that maybe we didn't cross before. And so we're having much more meaningful dialogue around whose person is this, and we realize it's all of our person. And so I'm having some the corrections plans that come in now from the counties and the interaction that happens locally is starting to change. And the ability for any of these service providers, state or county, to kind of step back and say, well, I don't have to play, is rapidly diminishing at both the local level and the state level. So I think what that forces then is the kind of planning this bill drives. At some point, people will come back and say, here really is where we need the money, and here is what we could do with it. But it'll be when we come back, those kind of plan, those will be a much more well thought out and coordinated effort would be my hope, and I'm seeing that here and there as we go forward. Arthur can talk more in depth if you like, but the Multnomah County wraparound, for example, is a collaboration between mental health, the Department of Corrections, probation and parole, housing, a variety of services that said this population really we need to focus intensely on. Let's all talk about it. Well, I can give some of this. Well, I can give some of that. Well, you go talk to them and tell me when you need me. That kind of stuff I think is happening more often. So we're kind of in that transition point to that new, I guess, the new way of case management.
I don't think there's an answer for this, but at least with bipolar disorder, that really becomes manifest right around, well, the average, it really starts kicking in age 26. I know there's earlier diagnosis, but like you said, the average age was 32 with those with mental illness, or at least one of the statistics here. And at least working with men, they hate to take medication, and you can't.
We do too.
And I think that's a real hard issue. I mean, we get into a civil liberties problem. You cannot force a person to have medication. And I think what our role is just being more and more open about mental health issues. I know that's not, you know, your role, but, well, in a sense, PR is, but hopefully the society is going to start accepting mental illness as a very real part of our society and not be so shameful about it. I think we've come a long ways, but until we can get our people to understand mental health issues and hopefully get people get drugs that aren't going to take away the emotions. Some people say, no, it makes me feel bad. I don't want to be on this medication, et cetera. Until we can maybe develop some medications that won't have some of the side effects that they do and where the shame goes away, we'll be a whole lot better off, and I think we'll have a lot less problem in at least in the correctional facilities for sure. Anyway, just
a comment.
I
want to
go.
You
want to
go?
Yeah.
Okay. Barry, we need to change the dates, obviously, in the bill. I mean, we've got, for example, you're supposed to have the plan no later than January 1st, 2002, and you probably need maybe a little more time than that. And it also has The one reporting to the 72nd Legislative Assembly, it's going to be hard to do that on January 1st when they don't exist yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think it's reasonable that we can develop the basics of a plan in the interim to report to the next Legislative Assembly?
Mr. Chairman, if the dual diagnosis task force, which reported to the alignment work group, was about an 18-month process, and that was a particularly difficult and long process. But I don't think if this bill passes, we'd have any difficulty making a report early in the 2003 session. I think that I was curious about the, and my testimony reflects the 2002 January date, and then reporting a year later, it seemed like there was a need for some modification there, but I chose not to. Actually, I didn't put forward in the testimony, but I thought that would probably get resolved.
That may have been in one of my not too lucid moments that I came up with those dates, but I'm sure at some
point. Off the medication.
I'm sure there was a logical reason for that, but it escapes me at the moment. So we will, other than modification of dates, we're fine with this then.
Okay. That'd be great.
Okay.
Chairman Cruz and members of,
yes.
My name is Arthur Tolan. I'd like to fully support this bill and express my appreciation for being invited to testify. I'd like to answer to Republican Anderson's issue that you raised about bipolar disorder, but not a specific bipolar disorder. I have seen in the course of 10 years in working in the Department of Corrections in the state of Oregon and other years in Europe in different countries as a psychiatrist, forensic medicine, a shift in population and demographics. And I think that we need to pay attention to that shift in demographics. And I wonder whether Oregon Youth Authority should be also included in this.
Absolutely.
This bill, because
absolutely.
What I have seen, at least on my unit, I'm running the special management unit, which is the equivalent of the inpatient psychiatric service, the Department of Corrections. And I see younger and younger individuals coming in the system, having their first psychotic break inside the prison. We diagnose them as mentally ill. Then we're facing a tremendous challenge in putting them back in the community, because now they're coming out as Measure 11, very aggressive, violent crimes, mentally ill, pervasive developmental disorder. Some of them, we do have a challenge, a problem facing them. So
OIA needs to be included in this. That's pure oversight. Thank you for pointing that out. Any other questions? Representative Cromwell.
I'm just curious about the by having Department of Corrections, does that automatically include Oregon Youth Authority, or do we need to put OIA?
They are separate. We separated them 6 years ago.
Yes. Okay.
So, gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I think this has been a good education for all of us, and we appreciate it. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3015. We'll bring it back amended at a future date, and we are adjourned.
Oh, hooray, hooray.